Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Ed Moya, Senior Market Analyst over at Oanda. Now Ed, the big news story for the markets today is the Fed, I guess, nominations. What's going on with leadership at the Fed? And as many rumors as we were hearing out of different factions about Lionel Brainard being nominated as the chair of the Federal Reserve, that didn't happen. However, Brainard is now the vice chairman. The chairman of the Fed is still Jerome Powell. Four more years of Powell. Ed, what was your takeaway from this announcement? I feel like we shouldn't be surprised, but it did seem like in the last week or two, maybe it was just media grasping for something to hold on to. They did make a bigger deal about Brainard potentially running the Fed here. Again, Brainard's vice chairman, Powell's still chairman. What do you take away from this announcement?
I think that the markets are rejoicing right now. I think for many reasons. Personally, I'm just happy they didn't wait till Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. More importantly, I think it's just continuity at the Fed. I think you're seeing that there was this growing concern that if Brainard got the nod, that the risks of a policy mistake by the Fed were going to be even more elevated. And right now, I think you're seeing there's this revitalized trade back into U.S. risky assets. U.S. stocks are they're off their highs, but for the most part, you're seeing a lot of people just gravitate towards that U.S. growth story. I think right now, the chances are that you'll see possibly an accelerated tapering, but still, I think right now, the base case has slightly been upgraded to two rate hikes for next year, I think that you're probably going to have right now the market is kind of dissecting some of the other parts of the White House announcement. I think that there was growing speculation that Brainard was going to head be the vice chair of supervision, which would have been trouble for financials. I think that's why you're seeing there has been, right after that announcement, you saw financials really pop because Brainard was viewed as possibly a hardliner. And I think this move in financials is partly because we saw, Treasury yields just kind of surge after that announcement. But I think you have to remember, the Biden administration has been talking to the progressives. It's been speaking to Senator Warren, and you're still probably going to get someone who's going to be tough on banks. And so I think that this does not necessarily mean that you're going to have an easier time with supervision. So I think that this move higher in financials, you're probably going to see some people try to fade that, because I think the problem is the administration has not given any timelines on when they're going to signal these other Fed vacancies that they have to get put in place. So I think overall it's markets are happy. I think that you don't have any reshufflings as far as your models go, as far as how to gauge the Fed. But I think you're probably going to see that we're still going to be focused on every inflation report for the next several months. And right now, I think there's expectations that you're going to see a strong case be made for that December 15th meeting to accelerate Fed tapering. And if that's the case, then, those rate hike expectations could grow even higher. And if that becomes, a steady theme, I don't think you're going to see equities completely rejoice in accelerated tapering. But I think right now, today the initial move is risk on. It's hard to argue that we're going to go much higher from here.
Ed, one more quick question on the Fed before we move on from here is that there are those three other nominations. Those are to be determined. And quite frankly, just how much power does the chairman have when you consider that there are voting members? And quite frankly, it doesn't seem like one rogue, even if we had a chairman that wanted to do more than what the other members did, that they would only be able to do so much, because there does seem to be some sort of a consensus that they come up with. That being said, what will matter for the Fed? Will it be these three nominations, or will it be just a simple fact of inflation data and market moves as we move into next year?
I think that the market has already priced in that, you know, the Biden administration is probably going to have more dovish members joining the board, and it's really all about inflation. It's inflation projections, and I think that you're not going to see anything really change anyone's focus until we start to see a growing divide amongst Fed members. But right now, yeah, it's all about inflation. And I think that the Biden administration, probably in the next couple of months, they'll start to make some appointments. But, you know, the clock is ticking. They need to make a decision now. It's not good to have these vacancies for such a long time. And I think you're probably going to see, as far as regular supervisory roles, that's going to be the big focal point for Wall Street. And if they do choose someone who's a little bit harder on banks than what Brainer was viewed to be, I think that will really weigh on the outlook. And I think we also have to remember too, for financials, if we continue to see yields rise, eventually that's not good for the economy. So I think while banks love higher yields, if it's going to lead to tougher economic times, that's not necessarily good for the financial trade. So it should be an interesting, volatility for financials over these next few months. But in the end, I think if the growth story remains intact, I think, you know, financials should still outperform.
Well, just a question on this Fed narrative, because they do still have those three positions to fill. And yeah, Powell retained the job, which isn't a huge surprise. I think even the betting pools in Vegas had him at 65% and Brainard at 35%, and she's still involved. But ultimately, their policy can't change that much anyways. They were already fairly accommodative, fairly dovish. Even if they put in three more doves, like, what can the Fed really do that's that radically different than what their plan was before Powell was reconfirmed? So I just don't see how this can change much. But there was a strong reaction in the financial sector and in the dollar today. So the U.S. dollar tracked higher right after that announcement. Do you think that the dollar will just keep running on this, U.S. strength in the economy narrative? Or, you know, what else do you think is behind this U.S. dollar spiking today besides just this Fed news?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the Fed news, that's going to dominate the papers. But, you know, when you take a look completely behind this dollar move, it's a lot of this is European weakness. I think that you're seeing this latest COVID surge really unnerve a lot of European investors. I think that Austria's, you know, nationwide lockdown announcement really, you know, woke up a lot of people. I think there was this kind of belief that we're on the other side of the COVID fence. And even today, comments from German Chancellor Merkel, you know, this is the worst for the Germans as far as fighting COVID. And I think that there are, rising risks that you could start to see some curbs in place. I think you're going to see some countries become hesitant to allow traveling from some of these COVID countries that are seeing rising cases. So I think the outlook in Europe has really deteriorated, at least the short-term outlook. I think that there's still strong optimism that, you know, the Eurozone growth story is they have the best potential out of all the advanced economies. And I think that you're going to probably see that short-term, this is there's still some more weakness here until we really start to see COVID under control. But that's really, you know, I think a big part of this move into the dollar. In addition to that, you're seeing diverging monetary policies. I think, you know, we're continuing to see fresh weakness in the Turkish lira as Erdogan kind of forces his central bank to do what he wants it to do, and you're seeing that ripple effect really, you know, hit most of EM. So I think that there's been a big surge here into the dollar from the Eurozone, from emerging markets, and right now, you know, the growth outlook across EM is choppy at best. So I think you're in for a tough period, I think, until everyone is really comfortably behind this COVID wave.
Well, just on this topic of waiting for the data points and the, you know, inflation data and whether they will move their tapering cycle up and accelerate it and start hiking earlier, you know, there still comes the point next year where the markets are going to have to digest just how much can the Fed actually hike rates. Once they get done with tapering and they take all that accommodation away from the bond markets, that we haven't seen that play out yet, so we don't know what's going to happen. But when everybody's pricing in at least two hikes next year, you know, how much can the Fed really hike it to get anywhere close? Even if inflation was to taper off some and go from 6% down to 5 or 4, they can't hike rates up to 4% without crushing under, you know, their balance sheet under all the debt. So ultimately, what can they really do next year when they start this hiking cycle? And how do you think the markets will react?
Yeah, I think, well, the punch bowl will be empty. And for a lot of people, that's going to, you know, help us finally see that significant pullback in U.S. equities. I think when you take a look at how Wall Street's positioned, whether or not, you know, we see rates go up to 1.5%, 3%, some people calling for 4%, there is a wide range. And until we have a stronger, I guess, consensus, you're going to see that remain the big debate. And right now, I think, still pricing in, two rate hikes, while, you know, on a day like today, it seems justified. I still think that, you're probably looking at one, maybe two, but I would feel more confident in just one, because you're going to be looking at several other factors, and I think that a lot of investors, they know that, you know, it will be difficult for the Fed to really deliver a significant amount of hikes because of our debt problem. So I think we're going to see exactly how bad inflation gets. And right now, I think you can't really think beyond that. And as far as, you know, positioning goes, so I think 2022 is going to be a very, difficult year as far as gauging what the Fed is going to do. But I think the base case is that you will start to see those pricing pressures ease around the second quarter. And, I'm hopeful that we don't have to see accelerated or rate hikes a lot sooner, because if so, then that could spell trouble for the economy.
Yeah, this move into 2022, it's unpredictable because there are so many moving parts. And I realize there's always a lot of moving parts heading into a new year. But quite frankly, with the Fed looking at a different policy, a tighter policy, as well as inflation, we don't know if it's going to continue to pick up steam, if it's going to level out at this 5-6%, even if it's going to go down. That's a big implication. Plus, we don't know what's going to go on with COVID and any potential lockdowns around the world. Just so many question marks heading into early next year, all of which have shown the ability to move markets. Ed, let's just quickly chat about one other market that we've talked about a fair bit. That is oil. And crude right now, it is now around that 76.50 level. It's had a bit of a reversal today to the upside, but what it seems like is now there are more countries talking about tapping into their strategic reserves rather than just kind of following along with what some of the major producers are doing. What do you think will take charge here as we move again towards next year? But where do you see oil moving?
Well, I think oil volatility will remain elevated. I think, for the large part of this year, it's been a one-way trade. We started the year with oil, just below $50, and it just kind of kept going all the way up to 85. And then I think we had too many $90, $100 calls, guilty as charged over here. But I think there is still an oil market deficit that remains in place. And I think, recently, though, over these past few weeks, you've had a surge in COVID across Europe. You've had gaining momentum from the White House and getting other countries to tap their respective reserves to thwart this surging energy crisis that many countries are battling. And I think right now, you're seeing that there has been, I think this the bullish oil trade and just kind of taking advantage of energy stocks as they were the best performing sector, you know, that had to get undone a little bit. And right now you're seeing OPEC Plus, they're pushing back because they're reminding markets that, you know, for the most part, they're the ones that can really control where oil prices go. And I think you had some weakness stem in the past couple of weeks from, you know, the Biden administration talking with the Chinese as far as having a coordinated effort. I think that was, for the most part, mostly priced in already. But now, you know, there seems to be that they've won over Japan. You know, Japan initially said, no, we're not going to tap our reserves. Now Japan seems on board. India was the big story today. And that's why oil prices really were selling off to start the trading week. And now you're having a decent reversal here because OPEC says that they could adjust their plans to raise production next month. Now OPEC, they set their prices, they have a monthly meeting. And I think there is concern that, okay, well, if you see this extra supply come from the US and China and India, that, well, they could maybe, you know, slow down some of their production. And that is really going to make for, I think, a violent trading environment here. But I think that you've seen oil prices go from 85 to, you know, the mid 70s now. And I think, you know, if COVID does not deliver, a string of nationwide shutdowns across the Eurozone, I think you still have an oil market deficit that is going to ultimately still remain in place for the rest of this year and a good part of the first quarter, that you should still see prices see some support here. But I think that you're going to be trading from headline to headline and on speculation on what production levels will be and how much reserves are getting tapped. But I think in the end, those reserves need to get filled up again. So I think you're going to see oil prices. I think the risks right now, short term, yes, they're still to the downside. But I think in the end, you're probably seeing a lot of traders looking for, you know, at what point is it too good of an opportunity to pass up buying oil? And I think that, you know, if WTI falls to 70, I think that will be a very attractive level. But I'm not saying that we're going to hit 70, but I'm thinking that you're probably going to see that the extent of the recent pullback should be winding down.
All right, Ed, we're going to wrap it up here. An interesting day to start off the week on this shortened trading week. But when it comes to the Fed, we probably do have a bit more of the same. However, those three other nominations, those will be interesting to see. Other than that, we're inching closer to the end of the month. So there are some key trends as well that we'll be watching and we'll chat about next week as we are in the final couple days of trading then to see if any of those trends are continuing or fading. Ed, thanks as always for your time, buddy. Hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. You too.